Make sure Julie's here.
I will.
Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here.
I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Item 1332, adopt and implement the North Pearl District Plan.
And 1333?
Adopt the action charts and additional implementing measures of the North Pearl District Plan.
I've been following the development of the North Pearl District for some time, and I've had several conversations with Gil and other folks regarding this project. We have discussed the concerns of various stakeholders about the potential of new development to create a complete community that's sustainable in the long term. The Bureau of Planning and the other partners working on this plan have crafted a plan that will influence the creation of family-focused housing and generally greater diversity of housing than we've seen in the Pearl to date. The plan also includes incentives to create public amenities such as a community center, the K-8 public school, and daycare facilities that are and will be desperately needed as the district and the larger central Portland area continues to grow. The plan also includes measures intended to preserve and protect historic and architecturally significant buildings throughout the Pearl District. These efforts will help us to support not only the growing and diversifying residential population in the Pearl, but also to support employers as well as employees. Tori and the other staff have been working with the community to create that vision and provide a predictable future for the transformation of this area. It involved neighbors, property owners, businesses, realtors, developers, architects, as well as urban planners to come up with strategies and proposals that will meet community needs and desires for the area. The plan meets our larger goals for the Pearl District and the larger central city area and marks the starting point for similar discussions that will be part of the central plan about how to support a growing and more diverse population of residences and businesses in the central city. With that, I'd like to call forward Gil and his folks.
Thank you, Mayor, and good afternoon, Council. Gil Kelly, Director of Planning. I just wanted to make a couple of brief introductory remarks, and I want to let you know I'm joined by Troy Doss, Project Manager from the Bureau of Planning, and Mauricio Leclerc from the Office of Transportation. And I wanted to thank these two in particular, but also Joe Zender and Mark Raggett, Laura Lillard, and all of their colleagues in PDC, BES, and Parks who helped out with this. As the Mayor mentioned, we had a wonderful group of community now in the Pearl, as opposed to the first time, our first pass through the Pearl. We now actually have a resident community there who've been very actively participating along with the development community in the discussion. So I think this product you'll see today is a very good outcome of that community conversation. Just wanted to put two things in context. One is that this is one of two efforts within the 1988 Central City boundary that we agreed to take on in terms of replanning in advance of the Central Portland Plan effort, which is now underway, the other being the Skidmore Old Town area, some zoning modifications there. So there will be other opportunities going forward in the Central Portland Plan to look at other issues that may come out of this discussion today and to look at other parts of the Central City. But we felt it was important, particularly in this area where, at least when we began the project, the market was very hot, where the current entitlements were very low, that we thought we ought to respond and do something to allow the continued development of this part of the Pearl District, even while we were gearing up to do the review of the Central City Plan. So that's the first point I wanted to make. The second point is that, you know, in 1988, when the Central City Plan was adopted, the policy thrust there was really to encourage a mixed-use downtown, and so we were offering bonuses and incentives really to create any kind of housing downtown. When you look at what we've grown into now, we've really matured, and so part of the hallmark of this effort, I think, is to really say, well, now that we have matured and now that for development purposes values have risen and rents have risen and so forth, can we now take on another sort of level of community building through some of these planning efforts. So the notion here that we focus on families and family-oriented amenities, more design attributes as well, and historic preservation, things that we didn't pay quite as much attention to in the first go-around, are now very live issues. And so that was really the focus of the effort here. So it's a little bit of a precursor, as we've discussed with some of you, of what's ahead in the Central Portland Plan, in the sense that we're now a maturing central city and we can kind of take things to the next level. We did not, we were careful in this discrete effort not to trip the wires of external constraints, and particularly here I'm speaking about the larger traffic constraints, which we bumped up against in the Northwest District planning a few years ago. Those kinds of bigger, heavier lifting, if you will, kinds of issues will be done as part of the Central Portland Plan. So we try to live within the framework that's there, but to address what we're seeing as community needs as the Pearl is maturing for a broad range of incomes and families. So just wanted to frame that for you. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Troy, who's going to give you a presentation, and then Mauricio will address you in terms of critical traffic concerns. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Gil. As mentioned, I'm Troy Doss. I'm the project manager for the North Pearl Plan. I want to walk you through the basic elements of our plan. Just get you acquainted with the area we're talking about. The North Pearl Plan area is really the portions of the central city that are north of Northwest Lovejoy. So it's those portions of the Pearl that largely haven't been developed yet, some vacant land, as well as some older industrial buildings that are pretty likely to be redeveloped here in the next couple of years. It also includes the waterfront areas of the central city that are north of the Broadway Bridge, extending to Fremont, as well as the Riverscape parcels, the old Terminal 1 site north of the Fremont Bridge. As Gil mentioned, we had a lot of partners in this process. It was really a joint project between the Bureau of Planning, Portland Office of Transportation, as well as the Portland Development Commission. I want to thank Steve Shane and Fred Warren's group for the urban renewal area for the River District. They've been instrumental in helping us pull this plan together. The project advisory group we pulled together for this met with us over a course of about 13 months. We met almost every month, and it included members of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, Northwest District Association, development entities such as Hoyt Street Properties, Riverscape Development, Pearl Real Estate, and Central City Concern. And we also had a number of at-large members of the residential and business community there, as well as a number of architects and urban designers. And then we had some experts in sustainable development as well as affordable housing on our committee. The basic premise, as Gil mentioned, of the plan was really to investigate a discrete increase in FAR in a very small portion of this area. In fact, the areas we're talking about FAR increases in this plan is only constitutes about 13% of the total plan area. There was also a conversation about how we might increase height in that portion and other parts of the plan area. But what we wanted to do was have a broader discussion about, as we increase entitlements here, what kind of community do we really want to create? So we really, do we want to have a more complete community, bring in sustainable green design elements? How do we expand our transportation, multimodal transportation network? And also, how do we result in an urban form that's really complementary to the Pearl District we already have and takes us into the next couple decades of development? So I mentioned the first concept here is complete community concept, and it's really the main element of the plan. And what this means is we've been very successful in encouraging a lot of residential development in a very short period in the Pearl District. But what we found is that the complexity of that residential development and the population was really kind of really of one kind for a long period. As we started to see that the community started to diversify, families started to occur in the Pearl, the needs started to change for what we were trying to bring into the district. But we had to counter a couple of myths as we started this project, and these are fairly common things you've heard in the past, I'm sure, that housing's too expensive for families. There's really no children that live in the Pearl. It's really mostly retired couples and singles who are never going to have kids. And, the district is pretty rich with amenities already. And we started countering those things one by one and looked at, well, if you look at housing affordability, really almost 50% of the housing in the Pearl District is affordable to those who make 80% or less of the median family income. And, in fact, 25% of that housing is available to people making less than 50% of the median family income. So there's a lot of affordable housing in this district. We also started looking at, well, what are the birth rates here? So it's true that around the time the plan was developed, the original River District plan in the mid-90s, and then the first housing parcel started coming in until about 2000, the birth rate was quite low. But as housing boom really started in the early part of this decade, those numbers really accelerated overnight. And we found that just the last year that we have good census data for birth rates, it's just 2006, we see 48 births occurring in the Pearl District. That's, put that in perspective, that's about 2 to 3 kindergarten classrooms being born every year in the Pearl District. Problem is, we don't see that the housing is really keeping pace with the needs, or it's not really compatible with the needs of families. 80% roughly of the housing, or a little bit over 80% of the housing in the Pearl, consists primarily of one-bedroom and studio apartments. Less than 20% of that housing has 2 or 3-bedroom units, and none of these projects have been designed specifically with family needs in mind. And when we started looking at, well, what would be a family-compatible housing criteria, we looked north to Vancouver, B.C., where they've been very successful with this, and looked at, they have design standards that have actually been adopted for guiding family-compatible housing. And what they find is that you really need to have 2 and 3-bedroom units, which isn't a big surprise, but what was interesting to us is that you really need about 20 or more per housing project, because really what it does is it creates a critical mass so you can collect a certain amount of families. So there's not just one family kind of off on its own in each of these buildings. The units themselves can be designed to be fairly small, but they can also be laid out in a way that accommodates play and storage, because you're going to need a little bit more storage for family needs, strollers, perhaps bikes and other types of play equipment. And then you need to have shared family gathering spaces. So you're looking at things such as exterior play areas part of the project, as well as some common rooms inside the buildings. And then lastly, they're really looking at, you want to have close availability to things such as parks, schools, daycare, and community centers. And what's important about those things is it becomes really an extension of the home, if you will. So the community amenities we started looking at that are available in the Pearl, we started looking at what's really there, and we found that really the closest community center is in the Northwest District, and it's well over 2 miles away. The closest elementary school is Chapman over in Northwest District again. It's over 1 mile away, and although it's not at capacity currently, based on the birth rate we're seeing in the Pearl alone, plus the birth rates that will occur in the Northwest District, it's not too long before we expect to see that school district at capacity. The middle school is East-West Sylvan. It's 6 miles away. It has over 900 students currently, and they've had to split into 2 campuses just to accommodate the capacity they do have. And then when you go to daycare, there are no daycare facilities for children in the Pearl, not one. But there are 3 daycare facilities for dogs, so we'd like to see that trend kind of reverse. So based on all this information, we worked this through with our family advocates and our stakeholders in the Pearl District and elsewhere, and looked at what kind of policy do we want to create here that we can adopt in our comp plan to really drive the next phase of residential development. And what we looked at is, how do we create a complete community that really brings in public amenities, diversity of housing types, encourages retail sales and services that really reflect this diversifying population, especially families with children. And then we set a course of, let's adopt some objectives for our implementing strategy that will try to create a greater diversity of housing, 2-bedroom or more units, family-compatible housing, as well as influx of public amenities. Next, we looked at, how do we really bring in the whole issue of sustainability into this community as we develop it? So we brought together, and this was largely an effort that was led by PDC and the Office of Sustainable Development. We brought together a lot of experts in the field of various fields of sustainable community development. So we looked at not just traditional aspects that we usually look at, which is green building design and stormwater, but we looked at social equity, development of healthy neighborhoods, how to create a sustainable economy as well as one that relies on the green industry. How do we not just look at stormwater management, but really trying to do a more natural system approach to stormwater management? If you will, stormwater that reflects the pre-development pattern of runoff, and then how do we expand our multimodal transportation system to reflect these overall ideas of sustainability? So with their assistance, we took each of those categories and broken down into a series of discrete goals. They're reflected in the plan, and I don't want to go through it in too much detail. It's pretty pretty expansive, but we have these number of these goals that deal with each of these key areas, as well as a number of action items. Already, as a result of this thinking, Office of Sustainable Development has initiated a process by which they're looking at the ability to do district-wide energy through the Pearl District and expand that through the rest of the central city. So that process has already started. And then we also would recommend is, rather than codify a lot of these ideas, which we'll want to consider as part of the Central Portland Plan, what we suggest is that for an interim period on a 5-year basis, we do a monitoring report that really sees how the public and private development has met these various metrics that have been identified in each of these goals. And then we adopt this community policy and various objectives that relate back to these issues I just discussed. big focus of the plan was growth and urban design, and really was how do we shape the urban massing, the urban form and building massings and just overall character of this district as we go forward. We held the two-day charrette in fall of last year with a number of our stakeholders and members of our design commission. And what we did is identify a couple key themes here that we really wanted to pursue. And really, they were more of a series of questions. So as we create this urban form, you know, how do we bring in high-density mixed-use development, but also incorporate our goals of sustainability, direct how we want to put in community assets and public amenities? How do we create a really quality street network and character? How do we shape our building scale, height, and design quality out of our buildings to reflect our overall desires? And how do we create a really well-designed network of open space, streets, and accessways, both public and private? From that, shook out a whole series of goals you see below. And rather than go through those, I'll just hit some of the high points of our discussion. All of this thinking led to this creation of this urban design framework plan, where we started looking at areas where mixed-use commercial might be more appropriate, where we could do continued expansion of our residential populations based on those locations where we might better suit public amenities such as a community center or K-8 public school, how we could expand the green streets network, how we can make connections to adjacent districts as well as portions of our own plan area, and how we make a stronger connection between the Pearl District that's located west of the railroad tracks to those waterfront properties east of NATO. Some of the big topics, and we'll cover some of these issues as we get into the zoning code amendments, which really better hit these points, but we looked at how we would address the urban form and shape the skyline. We looked at how we could set building massing such to reflect preservation of pedestrian scale, not shade out our street environment, not shade out our public amenities, such as our parks. And a big issue, which really came from the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, was how do we expand our protection of historic resources in the district? A lot of the buildings that are there have a very old historic character, but very few of them are actually historic landmarks. So we wanted to look at how we could preserve those because they speak to not only the architectural heritage of the district, but they also have a big impact on how they preserve scale and at the pedestrian level and help offset some of the impacts of having a district that's entirely large-scale, tall development. Another big factor of this was a change to the River District design guidelines. If you look to the example on your left, the existing design guidelines, one, they are completely text-based. There's no graphic images in them. And they also speak to the prior industrial sanctuary that used to exist in the Pearl that's no longer there. So we wanted to update, correct some of those factual errors, but also keep the general guidelines because they're pretty good, but infuse them with a series of graphics that better explain what it is we're trying to get out of this. Next, our transportation policy. Transportation in the district has been a big issue for us because we recognize that the Northwest area does have its fair number of transportation constraints. But when we looked at what we're really proposing, it's about 13% of the plan area gets an FAR increase that goes from 2-to-1 to 4-to-1. And if you were to max out all of that development potential as well as all the development bonuses you had, you really would only result in about 2,000 additional housing uses. That's not likely to occur. But we want to look at the high end of our potential impact. So we modeled based on that premise, and then we built in a number of strategies. So how do we take advantage of that existing street network to make sure that we can maintain our capacity and try to reduce congestion? How do we increase the percentage of non-auto trips, improve our transit, bicycle, and walking network, reduce parking ratios to those on par with the rest of the River District, and then implement a transportation management association for the whole Pearl, as well as expand our Green Street connections? And this diagram helps to show some of those concepts came into play. You'll note that we expand our Green Street concept. Currently, it's really just on Pettigrove. At this point, we extend it to Raleigh and consider other streets as well. And a key feature here that may get brought up in discussion later on is the concept of taking the Lovejoy and Northrop streets and turning them into a couplet that would extend from Northwest 10th to Northwest 16th. So it really contains that primarily inside the Pearl District. But what it does is it helps relieve a lot of the congestion that's currently occurring on Lovejoy. It also helps to improve streetcar capacity through the district. As we were talking about street hierarchy and character, we wanted to look at how can we maybe design our streets a little bit differently to better handle stormwater capacity, as well as influence, increase pedestrian and bike usage, be compatible with transit, and in some cases allow for the spilling out of retail and cafe uses onto key streets to enrich the life of those street faces. From all of this became this transportation policy where we really look at this idea of how do we, you know, provide a transportation system that really addresses the full range of options and looks at our sustainability goals as well as our reducing or at least our attempt to try to reduce reliance on the automobile as the sole means of transportation. One thing that came up during our Planning Commission reviews is that I want to mention is there were requests to look at a couple of properties that are on the east side of the railroad tracks. These properties primarily are serviced off NATO, and the request was to increase the floor area ratios there. There's a number of reasons why we didn't want to support that and why Planning Commission and Design Commission didn't want to support that, but the primary one for us was that we've done some transportation modeling that showed that if we were to increase the floor area ratios there, we would have failures elsewhere in our transportation system. But what we'd like to do is say, rather than just say no to those requests, we'd like to say not now and come back to that as part of the Central Portland plan and investigate that, and we can look at all of our transportation constraints. One of the big problems here is if you look at this diagram here, you see these arrows come off of NATO. It really shows the few places in which traffic has the ability to get off NATO when you increase capacity there. It's different than the rest of the Pearl District because the grid pattern allows you any number of ways to bleed the traffic you will off of the grid. Now, getting down to the implementation strategy, the zoning amendments, first off, as I mentioned, there's this old kind of pattern of regulatory boundaries up there that reflect the prior industrial sanctuary that used to occur in the Pearl. That's gone now, and what we want to do is really expand the North Pearl subarea to take over what used to be the Northwest Triangle and actually include some other parcels as well, the old industrial tracts as well as the Riverscape site, the old T1 site north of the Fremont Bridge. That'd be our first move. And then this map here shows the area highlighted in green is really the only area we're proposing floor area ratio. So that area currently has a floor area of 2:1. In this case, we'd be increasing it to 4:1. The green area. I say red area. So the green area. Okay. Let's be clear on that. Yeah, the green area is the area where we're increasing the floor area ratios. At the same time, we have an existing policy in the plan that targets residential developments. This is what Gil mentioned earlier. This goes back to 1990. We were hoping we would encourage residential development to happen in the Pearl. Well, we've succeeded. It's happening. We don't really need a residential target area. We also have a bonus target area, and this is probably the bigger offender of all of them. What you really look at here is within this area, if you were to do development and you were going to take advantage of our development bonuses, the area on the left, the map on the left, it would show you that if you develop in that area, use a bonus, you have to use the residential bonus before all other options. Well, the residential bonus only gives you additional floor area just for doing residential development. It doesn't give it to you if it's affordable housing or if it's market rate housing. It doesn't matter if it's a single bedroom or if it's four bedroom. So what we wanted to do is turn that on its head and say, let's create a new target area that's really in the area where we see most of the residential development occurring in this plan area and set up a couple different incentives. First thing is we reduce the residential bonus. It still does occur in that area, but rather than getting a maximum 3:1, you would only get a maximum of 2:1. Next, what we did is we brought in this new family housing bonus, and really it provides as much FAR as the residential bonus, but it doesn't in exchange for family-compatible housing. So in this case, you would be getting a bonus of 2:1 for every two-bedroom unit you create, 3:1 for every three-bedroom unit you create. You have to provide 20 of them per project, and then you need to create some on-site interior common rooms as well as exterior play space. Next, to get at this community amenity bonus we talked about, and how do we get K-8 schools and community centers and daycare facilities. So what we said is, let's target those specifically. And what we'll say is, if you build that as part of your mixed-use project, it could be residential, it could be commercial, we won't hold the FAR used to create that amenity against your overall project. So it's a benefit both to the service provider as well as the developer.
Is that strictly for school?
It could be daycare, it could be school, it could be community center, and it could be library. We think library is down the road, but we think the populations will be dense enough later on to probably justify a branch library in the Pearl as well. But that's not the main focus now. I'd say community center, school, and daycare are the primary focus right now. But those are the only amenities that you would qualify for this bonus.
Can you go back to just for a second?
Sure.
One more. So where it says in the proposal, three-bedroom units, 12,000 square foot max. get the 3-to-1. Can you just excuse me, 1,200 square foot max, by 3-to-1 bonus. Can you explain why it's a max and not a minimum?
Yeah, we didn't want to give a bonus for really large units that were going to be so expensive they would be out of reach of most families. Now, this isn't by any means only available to affordable or subsidized housing, but we wanted to be the units, keep them small enough that they could be affordable for subsidized housing as well as market rate housing. And actually, if you look at the size, we've talked to some of the developers, you know, this isn't that far off from what they're already doing when they do build two-bedroom units. So it may seem small if you were building in Alameda or Irvington, but it's really not that small for the Pearl District. And actually, it's not that different than a lot of multifamily development you see around the city.
And it doesn't limit the housing that might be provided inside the other housing bonus, only within this family bonus.
Yeah. Thank you. And then the last, you know, it's not really so much a bonus, but in a way it is that we put in a new transfer provision for FAR, which really focuses on these historic buildings. So as I mentioned, we already have a transfer provision from landmark structures. But what we wanted to do is say, if you were a designated historic resource in the Pearl District, we're going to go ahead and extend this transfer provision to you. Sorry, let me go forward more. So what you see here, this map, it shows you a number of these buildings that actually, only the blue ones have the historic designation, but all the other ones, except for the red, have some type of historic designation within the city. So what we said is, let's go ahead and create a new area that includes the entire Pearl District. If you are a historic landmark, a contributing structure, or a ranked resource, will allow you to transfer your FAR from your site to another site inside the Pearl District. Well, that will give us additional building potential. It'll help us preserve some of these buildings, and hopefully it'll generate income that'll help the developer or the owners of those buildings rehab the structures they have. This, once again, I want to give the Pearl District Neighborhood Association a lot of credit for helping us with this, because this really generated from their ideas, and we think this is a very valuable tool. We've also should note, we've ran this past the Landmarks Commission, Design Commission, and the Planning Commission, and they're very wild about this idea.
It might be important to note, just given the case the council took up over a year ago, the Allegro, that we're limiting the transfers to inside the shaded area here, so they're not crosstown transfers. They're within the same traffic analysis area, so that, and that was important for us.
And then lastly is how we're approaching height and building massings in the district. So currently, this is the existing regulatory framework for height, and it's a bit confusing just to look at it. But what it really starts off as is every building inside the Pearl District, for the most part, is limited to 100-foot maximum height. And if you get more height, you have to earn a certain amount of bonus FAR, then you get a certain amount more height. Unless you do residential, you can get an automatic 75-foot increase right off the bat. We wanted to broaden that to say, let's just go ahead and target the areas inside this plan area where we're comfortable with seeing bonus height. And if you use floor area bonuses to get above 100 feet, to create the building above 100 feet, we're going to go ahead and let you have more height. Now, we want to be sensitive, though, to some of our concerns. So the waterfront area, we want to limit, the waterfront area we want to limit to a bonus of no more than 75 feet above the maximum 100. But rather than set a maximum on the Pearl District that's west of the railroad tracks, we said, let's have no height limit. And this was shockingly not that controversial, because what it does is, rather than regulate by maximum height, we're actually regulating by the amount of floor area you have available to you. So it only is really going to allow you to get so tall. And the taller you get, the thinner your building is going to have to be. So that's one key note here. And one thing I would also say is, we wanted to make sure that we still were regulating these massings to a degree, because you could still get a pretty massive building with those regulations, even though you have a limited amount of floor area available to you. So what we'd say is, for the first tier, which is really from 100 to 175 feet, we're going to make sure that your facade lengths aren't any longer than 150 feet, and that will allow for a certain amount of visual permeability, and it won't overly shade out the pedestrian realm. It also... let me come back to this. But then the next tier is, when you get above 175 feet, we really crunch that massing down even more. So we say your massings can't be any longer than 120 feet, and your floor plates for your tower can't be any larger than 12,500 square feet. So really what we're trying to get at is massings that don't kind of crunch the pedestrian scale, they don't shade out the environment, they allow for a lot of view corridors, and they still allow for a lot of variability in how those buildings are programmed. And then lastly, what we took on was this notion of how do we extend the pedestrian environment that's on 13th northward and protect that before development occurs there. If you go down Northwest 13th, and I think the photos here kind of show you that really you have these older buildings, and they typically are somewhere between 50 to maybe 75 feet in height, and it really creates a pretty dynamic pedestrian realm. If you experience that when you go there on first Thursdays in the summertime. And so what we wanted to do is make sure we could replicate that as we went northward. So what we decided to do was we would limit the building heights immediately adjacent to that right-of-way to no more than 75 feet. And then once they get above 75 feet, they need to set back another 25 feet before they go any taller. So what you're really going to experience as a pedestrian is really only that 75 feet, not the taller massing. So we create this new setback criteria. So in summary, I want to thank our project advisory group and our partners. They've really stuck with us through this whole process. And what they helped us do is create these new plan amendments to really deal with this complete community concept, deal with the sustainability concept, and then a series of code amendments and our updated River District Design Guidelines. And I'm going to conclude with that, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. We can take questions now or after testimony, whichever you prefer, Mayor.
I was going to ask observe about one aspect, Troy. I had the benefit of having some of the members of our audience, Patty, Nancy, and Kirsten, take on a tour here some time back. So I was really focused on the aspect of the daycare and the schools and the community center because that's what they wanted me to focus on. And so I was very pleasantly surprised that not only have you acknowledged that, it seems to be a large component of this plan. Is this the incentives are intriguing the way that you've, which I really appreciate, increasing the FAR if those amenities are in the site. Is that something we've done somewhere before? Is it just because of this effective lobbying on the part of these very powerful women?
There is a daycare incentive that exists in the code, there's one drawback. It's been used twice, but there's a drawback to it, we think, in that really it requires you to keep that facility in perpetuity. So as long as the building's there, you have to have this daycare facility. And so you find that only tenants who are there for the long haul can commit to that. And so the two buildings that exist in is one's a federal building and one's a state building. Hmm. So what we've done is instead say, look, you know, if you can create that amenity for a period that's no less than 10 years, you're going to create such a demand, you're not going to have to worry about that expiration date, and you're not going to create the space and leave it empty as a developer because that's a drawback to you. So we think there's an incentive there. And in fact, as we were cooking all these ideas up, you know, we tested them with economists and developers to make sure that they had some viability, but we still wanted to see when they might be used. Well, as it turns out, we have a developer who's ready to go and waiting to do a project. So I'm not sure if Ed McNamara is here. He can talk a little bit about his project if he is, but he has an affordable family housing project proposed. He's waiting for these amendments to get adopted. And my understanding is that he has a pre-K public facility as well as daycare coming into this facility on the ground floor. So it speaks exactly to these bonus provisions.
Which is excellent. And then how about the affordability factor? Is there anything that we do in the design stage as we are doing this now that also addresses this? Because I also, I didn't just learn, but reinforce that not the Pearl isn't just comprised of wealthy folks. There's a lot of working class people with kids there who are needing these kinds of services. So it's great there to be a daycare facility, but have we addressed the issue of affordability for parents, or is that something that just the developer decides?
Well, to a certain talk about housing or for the daycare facility.
Daycare specifically.
We haven't addressed that specifically, no. Although maybe Ed can speak to a little bit about what his thoughts are in his project, but we haven't set it any ratios. In fact, most of these, even for the housing, we decided we didn't want to set affordability rate. We wanted to have it available and at sizes that we could hopefully subsidize for affordable housing, but also allow market rate to occur. So. So not specifically.
Gil, I have a question.
Yeah.
If we adopt the zoning code amendments, and I realize you're planning, not PDC, but just in general, your understanding, how much of the plan development that is dependent on TIF gets tied up because of the River District Amendment appeal?
Well, that's an interesting question. without predicting the time frame or how that might get the appeal just, might get resolved.
Let's posit at worst case a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, a number of the projects, but I'm thinking particularly Hoyt Street, they have an agreement with PDC, which has certain stipulations in it. I don't think that remaining, and Steve Shane is probably here, that project contemplates money coming from TIF into those particular housing projects. But I'm going to ask Steve Shane to respond to that. So they're pretty much free to go. I mean, essentially what's been holding them back is the low 2-to-1 base FAR at that end of the district. So.
Okay, thanks.
I think the return of the market is probably the more important factor at this point. And just to get back to Commissioner Leonard's point, we've been sort of anxious to tinker with these ideas of how we kind of negotiate more public benefit out of entitlements. And that being said, I certainly wouldn't take anything away from the effective lobbying efforts of the people you spoke with. They were actually really great partners in the process pushing us along. So.
Mauricio, did you want to say anything?
Not at this time. I think Troy captured the essence of the transportation.
Mauricio, are you prepared today to tell us how we're going to pay for light rail to Milwaukee?
Not yet.
Okay.
We're working on it, yeah.
There's three invited speakers, Kirsten Lee, Nancy Davis, and Lloyd Lindley. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and anybody can begin.
My name is Kirsten Lee. I am a co-founder of a group called Central Portland Families, which began in November 2007, and the group is focused on advocating for people who live, learn, work, and play in the Central Portland area. I'm a resident of the Pearl District since 1999, and we've been raising our son there since 2003. Just want to prove to you that do in fact have a son. He's now 5. This is him when he was 3, and he was playing on one of the tiny amenities that there are for kids in the Pearl District. It's one of the bike racks that's shaped like the Fremont Bridge, and it's one of his favorite things in the city, in the neighborhood where we live today. And this is another picture of him with his grandmother enjoying Tanner Springs, proof that people really do go to Tanner Springs and enjoy it. And he asked me the other day, when is that other park going to happen with the play structure? And I said, well, I don't know, and I just talked to my neighbor today who was on that committee, and she said it's been held up for a year. The process has been stopped there. And so that leads me to the first thing I would say is I would encourage you to adopt and move forward on implementation of the North Pearl Plan as soon as possible, because I'm afraid that stuff is going to happen otherwise that won't take into consideration all this important work that there was a lot of community input on. I'm here to ask you to adopt that and to do it with haste, and to remind you that this, as has already been stated, it was a really great collaborative partnership between the city and the citizens, developers, and business people that culminated in this plan. And my hope is that it will not go to waste all that work, and that it won't just remain a document and a bunch of stuff written on paper that doesn't actually come to life. The development of the North Pearl Plan was a community process that received continual input from parents, people, and families who care about building a vital, dense neighborhood that welcomes a diversity of residents of all ages and income levels. Perhaps even more importantly, it seeks to create an environment where they can and will stay. It will not just welcome them, but they will be able to stay there. They'll be able to afford to stay there, and there will be the quote-unquote amenities that will make it a desirable place, not just to come, but to remain. If the North Pearl Plan gets adopted and implemented, I think it will create the best that the city can be, a place that people can move to, a place they can call home, a place where children can be born, and families in all their formulations can grow and thrive. and that it will also be a great place to grow old. And having participated on the advisory group that created the North Pearl Plan, I see it as encompassing a lot of really important concepts that can expand into the larger Portland plan as it develops. There was a lot of thought into how to make the central city as well a vital place for not just families in particular, but for people of all ages. And I encourage you to adopt it. Thank you.
So, Kirsten, I'm just curious, have you invited Commissioner Saltzman on the same walking tour I had?
We have invited him, and we actually ended up coming to his office. And
you need to get him out like you did with me.
I'm
just going to tell you a little secret. He's in charge of the Parks Bureau.
Get that fields built, mister.
Okay. Yeah. I hear.
Okay.
Welcome.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Davis, and I'm also here to testify in support of the North Pearl Plan, especially the complete community and the family aspects of it. As with Kirsten, I hope that you feel our sense of urgency that this happen, that the plan be approved, and that it be implemented. I want to share two trends, one observation, and five very consistent questions that get asked in our neighborhood. The first trend Troy already touched on, and he's a better speaker than I am, but it's there are lots of babies. You saw those 2006 numbers, basically two kindergartens. There are a lot of babies. There are a lot of births. 2006 was a while ago. We're also interestingly seeing fewer families moving out, which, you know, a cynic might say is because the froth in the market has made it a little harder to flip condos. But we're also seeing just a different type of resident. I mean, people who are moving here not for a short-term investment property, but rather to raise their families here. And so we want that trend to kind of be factored into what we're seeing. And finally, I'm going to call this an observation because we've only seen it happen a couple times, but it is very unique, and it's not something we saw even 9 months ago. We're seeing families move in. Rather than children being born here, if you appreciate that distinction. We used to see that because Wieden and Kennedy or Ziba or someone else would recruit someone nationally or internationally and a family would locate here. But in the last 2 weeks, I've met a family of three who moved from West Lynn and a family with three kids who moved from West Lynn and a family with two kids who moved from Newburgh. So we're very curious if that happens. We won't just be factoring the birth rate, we'll be factoring in migration, which would be a new challenge that we haven't faced yet. Another thing that has happened since some of you toured and we spoke while you were a candidate and there was lots of excitement is that we've opened a clubhouse. And we're very grateful to Gunn Denhart for donating the space and to Zimmerman Community Center for funding it. It's 490 square feet, has a cement floor and no bathroom. So right in front of Ben and Jerry's. I think
we'd address. I'll make note of the address. Get it to Commissioner Leonard. Yeah.
Thank you guys. But families are coming there. They're playing. They're connecting. I've met probably 40 families that I didn't even know existed in just the less than a month that we've actually been open. And when the conversation turns to the neighborhood, there are very consistent themes. And I'm not going to belabor these because it's stuff you're going to hear today. But one is winter's coming. The weather's going to turn bad. Well, where will our kids have healthy indoor active play? There is not really a community center that serves this neighborhood. The second question is where can we find condos that actually have bedrooms or even rooms that doors that close? There was some discussion about 1,200 square feet, 1,000 square feet. My son spent the first 3 years of his life in a 1,200 square foot apartment where he was in the bathroom. That might not seem like a lot to folks who have more space, but we have families here who with us today who are living in far fewer square footage, and you know, 1,000 or 1,200 square feet with bedrooms would be a real luxury. Affordability, as you know, is a huge issue. We put together a focus group to take a look at some of the plans that Ed McNamara has for his family housing site and the energy and enthusiasm in the community for a true affordable building that has a family focus and is affordable in the long run was intense. Working moms and parents, although it's often the moms, are always asking, where are the daycares? Troy is a little off. There is actually one daycare in the Pearl. It's run out of somebody's condo. It has a max of 8 kids, and it also has some extreme limitations. Families get that daycare has to compete with retail rates, but we'd love retail rental rates. We'd love to see some creativity around how to do that, how to have it be high quality, how to have it be affordable for families who work and live in that neighborhood. We've heard, although we can't confirm, that Chapman just added a kindergarten class. And there's also a lot of questions from parents about Emerson because, as you know, it's a charter school. So it's right there. People would love to just walk their kids 3 or 4 blocks. I'm not saying change Emerson. I'm just saying there's tremendous interest in having that type of thing in the neighborhood. And finally, the idea of a community space. We are, very grateful, and we feel blessed to have the space that we want, but more square footage and a bathroom would be a nice thing. So those are the 5 themes, the 2 major trends, and the observation. I hope that you will vote in favor of the plan and implement it soon. Thank you.
Can I just respond to one thing you said about affordability? I'm the housing commissioner, and the mayor-elect has asked me to give him a blue ribbon sort of blueprint for where we go in housing in the next 4 years. You can use, as you know, I know I'm speaking to the converted, but you can use the zoning code to achieve certain goals, but you can also use tax abatements or what we call tax incentives to do the same thing or to complement that. And one of the things that we'll be looking at is, are there ways of using tax abatements more creatively to create incentives for certain kinds of socially desirable housing? And that would be including family housing in certain parts of the city. So, and it's politically, it's an uphill fight for a lot of reasons. It's foregone revenue. Tax abatements are not very popular citywide, but it is a tool. And I just want to park that idea that as we complete our work on the zoning code, there's this other piece we can look at that could be helpful in terms of incentivizing certain kinds of housing and affordability. And I would love to get your feedback on that.
We'd be happy. We have parents here who are in market rate housing as well as Housing Authority of Portland Housing, and I know you were very active with that.
Yeah.
So we'd be more than happy to help in any way possible.
And I can tell you that the mayor-elect is very strong in his commitment to schools and housing and that tie, and that's, family-friendly housing in your school. So we want to at least make sure we've looked at all the tools that are available, put them out there, and then have a debate about them.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's it. One further question, Nancy. I mean, you mentioned something about 2 or 3 bedroom units actually having bedrooms with doors, I guess, as opposed to closets.
Loft, yeah.
So I think, is that encompassed in the FAR bonus for family housing, that it'd be something that's more conducive to bedrooms, I guess?
It would be great. You saw...
That contained in the...
Yes, that slide that shows that there was a question about it, in fact, the idea of why would there be a 1,000-square-foot max or a 1,200-square-foot max. It's kind of that slide, and it spells out the important... There are 2- and 3-bedroom units in the neighborhood. It's just they're on the 15th and 16th floors, and they're 5,000 or 6,000 square feet, and you have to have $1 million. So the beauty of what our fabulous folks in the planning department have put together is what is acknowledged in other cities where there are big urban populations, which you can just compress that in because we outsource so much else. We outsource our yard, our family room, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, it's in the plan. Everybody I've talked to it would be better than what they have now. I guess that's the most succinct way I can say it.
And Commissioner Salzman, a bedroom has a specific definition in the building code. Closet has to be certain amenities that a loft would not call.
Yeah, right.
Couldn't call a loft.
Actual components, right.
Yeah. Okay.
And I guess I would add one thing onto that, which is a very, very strong component of the North Pearl plan and was discussed a lot, is that it is talking about building a community that is an external extension of the home, that there, because many people are being asked to live in a dense environment in smaller square footage, the outdoor community, the outdoor spaces need to, and the neighborhood as a whole, need to include the things that are an extension of the home, that are a yard, that are a place to play, undercover, and various other components that you can't do when you're living in a loft or an apartment or a place with a restricted outdoor space.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was well done. Good afternoon, Mayor Potter, commissioners. Welcome, Commissioner Fish. I'm Lloyd Lindley. I'm at 620 Southwest Main Street, Portland, Oregon. I'm the chair of the Portland Design Commission and here representing the commission. I'm going to read my comments because they reflect the commission's comments. Vice Chair Jeff Sturr and I participated in the first North Pearl workshop conducted by the Bureau of Planning. The commission has also been regularly briefed on the planning work by Troy Dawson and Laura Lillard and Maurizio of the Office of Transportation. We received testimony that was highly complimentary, and the commission would like to thank Troy and Laura for their briefings and diligent work on bringing stakeholders, property owners, and neighbors together to balance community needs and aspirations. As you may know, the Design Commission has supported higher density mixed-use development, especially within the central city. This work before you is a positive and progressive evolution toward more compact and sustainable development. The Commission supports 4 points. One, increase FAR from 2-to-1 to 4-to-1 in the designated area. Two, provide a bonus of 9-to-1 north of Lovejoy, including FAR transfers from contributing registered historic buildings, inclusion of neighborhood facilities such as schools, community centers, and libraries. And I'd like to add that a clearer definition of a community center is now in the plan and code commentary, which provides a better basis for awarding bonuses. Before, it was a little thin. Three, historically, the commission has consistently requested 3-bedroom and larger units that would be suitable for families. However, we have had mixed results at best. We strongly support the new efficient family size unit housing bonus option. Four, the Design Commission has requested and supported the concept of point towers. Point towers are slender, graceful buildings, typically rising from a 3-to-4-story podium. You saw the diagrams that Troy showed earlier, the different combinations. The result, urban form, provides maximum view permeability, light and air penetration, solar access, and graceful building mass. The Design Commission agrees with proposed building height, floor plate, facade length, and bonus provisions. These zoning amendments, in conjunction with the River District Design Guidelines, can deliver a diverse and open skyline that will enhance sustainable living and working for all. The Design Commission, through a number of briefings and work sessions, is pleased with the consolidation of and the amendments to the River District Design Guidelines. Staff's work has eliminated redundancies between the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines and the River District Special Design Guidelines. The process provided an opportunity to apply past lessons and successes that will enable the Design Commission, development community, and the public to continue shaping our great city. The guidelines expand the sustainable and expressive values that strengthen neighborhood personality and advance Portland as a national and international urban model. The Design Commission supports City Council adoption of the North Pearl District Plan and requests that Council adopt the amended River District Design Guidelines. Thank you.
How many folks have signed up to testify?
We have 14 people.
Okay, please call the first three.
The first three are Steve Abel, Jeff Sturr, and Jeff Bachrock. They'll be followed by Patricia Gardner, Joan Pendergast, and Rick Michelson.
Thank you for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Abel. I'm an attorney with Stoll Reeves, 900 Southwest 5th, and today I represent Summit Properties. And Summit is the owner of property commonly known as the Crescent Electric Building on the riverside of Nato Parkway, just south of the Fremont Bridge. About a week or 10 days ago, I sent you a proposed amendment that I characterized as a friendly amendment, and I'm pleased to see that a document I saw earlier today, your staff has prepared some language that responds to the amendment, and it too labels the amendment as a friendly amendment, so I'm glad we're all friends about that. My amendment that I'm proposing simply provides some equity with respect to heights in that particular location, and the amendment proposes that instead of a 100-foot height limit, that under some circumstances there be a 175-foot height limit. That height limit would be consistent with the remainder of the properties located along the river's edge north of the Fremont Bridge. Somehow that height got lost, if you will, in the Planning Commission deliberations. What we're not asking for is any increase in FAR. Instead, we're asking for height only, and that height only is being asked for so that we won't end up with a bunch of short and squatty buildings in that particular location. And I'm pleased to see that the language that staff has provided to you implements that request, and we do accept that language if you choose to adopt it as a part of the design package. And Jeff Sturr is here as well, representing the same property owner, Summit Properties, to talk about the design aspects of the request.
Good afternoon, Jeff Sturr, Holst Architecture, 110 Southeast 8th Avenue, and I am also here on behalf of Summit Properties, a longtime client of my firm. I will try to be as brief as Steve here. We are asking for this modest increase in height, and we believe that it really offers tangible public benefits in this case. And I've given you a handout, a simple handout here. It's a two-pager. The front page shows you kind of the massing that could currently be built on that south or on those sites in that area right now. And what we're asking is that, and as Lloyd kind of mentioned, is we're asking for a bit more flexibility so that we can take some of that massing up and also reduce floor heights in that area. That would be the trade-off in that sense. And I think that those two diagrams that you look at here start to show you that there are a number of benefits that result from that. One, it gives the design team or the development team greater flexibility in how they kind of sculpt the buildings along the riverfront edge there. And clearly it also does allow more permeability for pedestrian traffic, both from kind of the district itself out towards the river. And that's really, I think, what this will help support is a much more urbane and lively waterfront in this situation. It's the only remaining reach of the river on the west bank that really can have the city come down right to the river's edge. We don't have that as strongly as we might like in this area, and it's something that's been commented on repeatedly, both in the design charrette for the neighborhood as well as forums in the design commission. It also will create greater access to air and light, both from the district towards the river and vice versa, from the other bank looking into the district as well, and we see that as a great attribute. And I would point out, as Steve said, this request is consistent with the planning that went on throughout this process and was really highlighted in the charrette that was held last fall that Troy mentioned. We've got a great neighborhood association working in that district. They've really embraced kind of this new urban style of living, and we're quite supportive of this. So we did approach planning on this and have had further discussion with it, and happy to see that it is being well considered. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'm Jeff Bachrach. I'm here today as part of the ownership group of Riverscape Lot 8, and I just gave you a little map just to be sure there's an understanding of where Riverscape Lot 8 is. And my issue today is really complementary to what you just heard. To create equity, so all of the waterfront properties in North Pearl are treated the same. Like you just heard, my issue is not FAR. I'm not asking you to increase the FAR for this site. The issue is height. And let me back up a step and just first of all compliment Troy in the process. He said he's been at it 13 months. My notes show we had our first meeting 18 months ago. So there's been a lot of issues, and I think Troy has done a marvelous job in managing a long process with lots of issues. And we're awfully close to being in agreement, Troy and I, but there is one issue that Troy and I and the Planning Bureau couldn't quite get in sync on, and that's what I'll try to explain to you here in my remaining 2 minutes. This is the issue. The Planning Commission and the planning staff agree that the 175-foot height opportunity should be available to Riverscape Lot 8. As you've heard, for these gentlemen all along the waterfront. We're in agreement there. There was no code language in front of the Planning Commission to implement that recommendation. And so when the code language